Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, dear listeners. Welcome back to the New Adventures of the Mountain Pass podcast. This is your host, as always, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my war room in my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia. The date is April 10th, 2024. And this is the Safe Space episode. It is early in the morning. I am getting my coffee, or drinking my coffee, so I'm slowly waking up, but I'm alert and cognitive enough to do this podcast. All right, we're going to get right into it. I'm sure when you probably heard the term or the phrase safe space, you kind of chuckled, right? That it's a joke to this at this point. And when someone says, "Oh, we need a safe space," or "This is our safe space," you think of some place in a school or in some sort of facility where they've got a little sticker in the corner of the window that says this is a safe space for the, you know, all the politically protected classes that are somehow oppressed by the same government. You know, you get your own flag, you get your own holidays, you get your own legal protections, you get to graffiti the crosswalks, but hey, you're oppressed. Just don't forget that. Don't forget that. And the concept of the safe space is underneath these people's definitions is this place where they can go and not experience discomfort. That is much of our society today, is ensuring that select politically protected classes do not experience discomfort. And that big discomfort is encountering somebody who doesn't agree with them. Who doesn't believe what they, you know, it'd be like the equivalent of having for a Muslim or a Jewish person or a Christian have safe spaces where they can go, where they will never encounter somebody who doesn't believe in their religion. But what's interesting about this is I'm not going to go into the private personal details, but I recently was reunited briefly with a group of people that I had not seen in many years. And we had grown up together in a very tight-knit social circle. And we were really, I was talking to one of the former members, like it was a Boy Scout troop or something, but talking about it. And this person made a very interesting point. This person said that it was a safe space for us. And I suddenly understood what I got the point of what they were saying. They weren't referring to the safe spaces that we think of today in terms of, it'd be the equivalent of somebody from the medieval time talking about like church, right? You're going to the Latin Mass of medieval times. You're not going to a Six Flags for Jesus church where they sing songs about how, you know, where you could swap out the lyrics and you wouldn't know if you were singing a worship song or a love ballad from the 1980s. What this person meant was it was a place where you... Let's back up a bit. Context is everything. And this is something I've really been dwelling on recently. Context is everything. Without context, things can't happen. People don't exist. They don't exist in that context, or they can't express themselves in that way. Let me give you a very brief, very simplistic manner. Let's say that there are two men. Both love to do artistic endeavors. They're very creative people. One guy grows up in a family where everyone around him is an artistic person, and that is seen as a big part of the family values, and they value the concept of being creative. They support the person. They allow them to, at the very least, let's even go to a third person, the alternative, where they may not be artistic themselves, but they are supportive of them just doing what they want to do, right? It's more of less promotional and more just open-minded or whatever you want to call it. They're just, yes, you love to do art. You know, that's great. Whatever you want to do in life, as long as it's obviously not illegal or moral, but just we support you being who you truly are. Now imagine there's this another family, same guy, and his family is full of guys, people who are into blue collar labor, have no creative bent whatsoever, and view it as being a place lazy people go. Right? Oh, you're into art. You want to become an artist because you don't want to work. You don't want to do real work. My reels works. Right? For them, if it's not manual labor or some sort of physical labor intense activity, it's not my real jobs. Now, in contrast, I've known people who believe that my real jobs, you have to wear a suit and work in a corporate office. That I've literally had people say, that's the only type of legitimate job. They didn't say it exactly like that, but they were basically, they were explaining how that was the type of work that a respectable middle class, upper middle class person does in the year fill in the blank. Like any other thing is dirty and degrading and beneath the dignity of the people in question. I've literally heard that. So that's kind of my point. So imagine that same artistic guy is in the family of the Montreal works is, you know, breaks your body by age 45. He has a couple choices. He can choose to express himself to eternal long-term conflict and ridicule and be treated like he's lazy when he's not. I mean, go read about Michelangelo and how his intense work ethic. Or he can just not pursue it because he doesn't want that just ongoing low level, probably. And in that context, passive aggressive behavior, because where they're projecting onto him this idea that he's lazy. Oh, don't bother having him do this. He's too lazy to do this. He wants to do his artwork like that. I mean, I'm betting a lot of you know exactly what I'm talking about, where they're not going to directly confront him and say, we think you're lazy. And we think that artwork is lazy. They're not going to say that because these type of people are going to be cowards. I'm going to be in a kind of a blunt mood when I talk about that stuff. It's cowardice. It's insecure people who are uncomfortable with individuals who are different from them because they don't know how to deal with it. But the point is that the one or other two guys have what we would consider to be a safe space, not in a childish, infantile way, but where they're allowed to express themselves and who they are in a way where it's at least acknowledged, if not supported. The third guy that I was just talking about, he's in a space where they, if it killed them, they will not acknowledge that this guy is not lazy. He just has different talents and aptitudes than us, and it makes us uncomfortable. And we don't understand it. So we turn to our assumptions, which is that being into art means that you just don't want to do a real work. So what does the third person do? Well, chances are much of his life is going to be spent in pursuit of a space where he wants to pursue his artwork and people around him don't question that or seem confused by it. They're like, yeah, I get it. Ultimately, a safe space in that sense is a place where a person is understood. And at best, what they're about is what the group's about. Another thing about context is there's things where there's certain emotions or expressions that are just require a sense of, I guess, emotional protection, right? Where sincerity, I can't remember who said this, but they said at some point, sincerity and authenticity requires a level of vulnerability. And we live in, frankly, in my opinion, a insanely predatorial culture where people who express sincerity or authenticity get attacked viciously, especially online where it's just easy because they're keyboard warriors who can attack them and make fun of them. This is why there's a lot of stuff in my life that most people have no idea about because I don't talk about it online with it. And I just don't talk about it. Because if you don't talk about it with people who are not part of the space, they can't say anything about it. Especially, this is the advantage of the internet. If you don't talk about it on the internet, nobody is going to know about it because everything is being discussed online. But what we've seen over the years, especially with the invention of the internet, is the destruction of these safe spaces. And for a lack of a better word, how about just for men who are, you know, revolting at the idea of, you know, I need my safe space. How about a place of belonging? Everybody wants to be, have at least one space in their life where they belong. Not where they're tolerated, not where they're, you know, acknowledged just for what they are. They want to be in a place where they feel like they fit in with the people around them. And that is a problem today because the group that I grew up with was very much a spontaneous, organic. It was not a formal thing. It was something that just sprung up spontaneously and, you know, it without this like pre-planning thought, it just, everything fell into place. And that's kind of what has to happen with a lot of these spaces. They have to be allowed to be created through just, or you know, for lack of a better word, organic social interaction. The problem is that's not what our society allows anymore. It's very much dedicated to the destruction of spaces because in order to have a space, you have to have people who are included and people who are excluded. And one of our many, to describe it as I see it, one of the many pagan gods that we worship in modern Western culture is inclusion. And in order to include everyone, that means that you have to get rid of anything that might cause someone to get excluded. So there's a lot of things that you can't express or can't discuss or can't talk about or can't be focused on. There's values. And when I say values, I don't just mean moral values. Like spontaneity is a value of mine. I like the idea of just being able to go, just decide to go do something on the fly and have people who have that sort of spontaneity as well. Well, a lot of people, especially today, do not like spontaneity. It makes them uncomfortable. It means that they're not in total control. They didn't plan it. Everything needs to be organized. Everything needs to be scheduled. So if you're part of a group where things just happen on the fly and there's somebody who it doesn't like that and it's uncomfortable, they're going to get excluded just naturally because they're not going to want to be part of the group. But if you're all about inclusivity, that means that you have to change to accommodate the lowest. Inclusivity means including the lowest common denominator of any single of any person that's belonging to the organization, to the group. What we're witnessing is this creation of what a lot of people call the longhouse. And it's this idea that it's a big house with no rooms. Everyone is all mixed in together. And I really see that a lot now where there is no, there's not even separate spaces for the adults. They're being forced to interact with the children in the same spaces. Men don't even have men have no spaces anymore. They have no spaces where they can go hang out with just men. And so there's a lot of stuff where people just, there's aspects of their lives that are never expressed because the context is not there. They don't feel like the values that they have are championed by any group that they're a part of. I think the other thing is when you talk about a safe space, you talk about this idea that you can express yourself sincerely and authentically in a way where people are not going to manipulate or take advantage of your honesty. It goes back to the predatorial stuff where you have people who are considered part of the tribe, so to speak, and people who are outside the tribe. People who are inside the tribe are to be treated well. They're to be protected and defended against attacks from outside the tribe. And people say that tribalism is a bad thing. I get your point, but at the same time, we are not all part of the same tribe. Like, exclusion is part of life, and it is a natural and normal and healthy part of life. It's like anything. There can be examples of exclusion that is wrong, and there can be examples of exclusion where it is absolutely necessary in order to preserve something worth keeping. Right? My home is my home. I get to decide. People do not just get to come into my home. I get to exclude people from my house. That is proper and fitting and appropriate because it's my house. As opposed to, say, a public sidewalk where pretty much anybody, as long as, you know, including people who probably shouldn't be, are allowed to use the sidewalk. And so what you end up having is a ton of people, millions of people who are just wandering through life with no sense of belonging anywhere they go. And so it creates this lack of identity of what am I and where do I belong? And this is far more, this is breaking it, this is separating it all from the kind of identities that you see discussed online. I'm talking about people where we're really getting, we're diving really deep into human relations where there are people that you just get. And it's not based on a identity that you will see being talked about online. This is like not even a political identity. There may be people that you disagree with politically, but you get along with them because you understand them. Because you connect with them on some level that's difficult to explain. And this is stuff that you can't organize. This is stuff that just happens where you meet somebody and you get a bunch of people together and you all just connect somehow where the communication is very good and you don't have to explain anything because you're all thinking on the same wave pattern. And this idea that you should have to explain to people outside that group why you include people and why you exclude people, it's not their business. And if you think that the longhouse mentality doesn't occur, I present a challenge to you. Get 8 men to go do something together for say 6 months in a community and see what happens. You're going to see people want to be included who are not appropriate for that group. And the inappropriateness can vary from you all like to show up on time and they're completely tardy, or they don't understand a lot of the inside jokes that you guys have and it makes them uncomfortable. Well, they're not willing to do the work necessary to be accepted. Whatever it is, you have to basically push them out or keep them out. And people are not used to having that happen anymore, where you say, you know what, this is only for us. That, I think, explains a lot of the weird behavior that you see now where, one, people are kind of craving, I think, an emotional intimacy that comes with being part of a group where you have a sense of belonging. And they have nowhere to express it. Where people, because you have a hierarchy of people that you are emotionally close to. There's people who are closest to you and people who are distant from you. We, by not allowing these spaces to form, we prevent those deeper connections. And I think that that's intentional because people, I use the word powers that be to describe just whoever is setting the norms of society does not want anybody to be too close to anybody. Because if, let's say you had a person who has deep ties with many people where they live, and for whatever reason, somebody wants to cancel them or destroy them. And instead of them being separated and isolated and atomized, people rally around them and push back and cause a lot of trouble. As opposed to somebody who's being canceled and everybody backs away because they just don't care enough about this person. Like that sense of personal loyalty to another human being. And I think honestly, for people in a state where many people of your like-minded beliefs are leaving, I think that this is part of the problem. Is I think that they would stay if they had a sense of belonging, but people have become so atomized. They're not only atomized in their state, but they're leaving in a atomized fashion where it's one by one by one in their own individual way. You don't have people collectively leaving together and then settling in another state together. So they're still atomized in states where they move to. So they're just going to be easily as pushed aside when the people that they're trying to get away from decide to move to that state too. Another thing that occurred to me is that this kind of dynamic, this creation of these spaces, this is going to require pre-internet social capital. And what I mean by that is where you have social skills that really are not acquired by people who grew up after the internet, the creation of the internet, where it was typical to have the internet in the house, where it was typical to have high-speed internet in the house, and more importantly, when it was typical for there to be smartphones. I think that these have destroyed people's social skills. I think that those who grew up with the internet or without the internet, like people like older millennials, we have social capital that needs to be preserved, but it also needs to be passed on in whatever manner possible. I think that this social capital needs to be taken seriously, because once it's gone, you can't teach someone how to have this stuff explicitly. This is stuff they learn growing up, seeing it in action. And once it's no, and the thing is with young people, if it's not their norm, you're putting them outside their comfort zone. This is where if someone's a parent, you have to make this seem like the norm for a kid, because then they're not going outside their comfort zone. They're doing what they think is normal. And on a related note, this is, to me, explains so much of the grifting and the fraud and the snake oil salesman tactics that we see online, where people are selling an identity. What they're really selling is, buy my product and you'll belong. You'll have a sense of belonging. You know, join my online club and you'll have a sense of belonging. Do this and you'll have a sense of belonging. And none of these things are adequate substitutes for, in my opinion, real life, in-person interactions with people that you spend time with. You do things together. You don't just consume things together. You do things together. So that's what a safe space in that sense looks like. What we see being politicized and being promoted are fake safe spaces. Why are they fake? There's nothing safe about a space where a 12-year-old, 13-year-old girl can go in there and have a adult convince them to have their parts of their body removed as part of some movement paid for without the parents' knowledge on text, on mom and daddy's dime, without their knowledge. Like, that's not a safe space. I can do a whole I will do a whole episode on this idea that so much of our society is, if you strip away the words and you look at what they actually are, you can see it for what it truly is. And we would use very different words to describe what we see. I'm not going to try and claim that we should try to redeem or restore or whatever the word safe space. I think, though, I finally understand what the actual real kind of space looks like. It's where someone feels, and for a lot of men who might be listening to this, who kind of snicker at the idea of feeling emotionally safe, guys, let me give you an example that you might be able to appreciate. Let's say there's a guy who he got back from Iraq and he had a ton of his buddies die and he killed a lot of people. And he's trying to find a space where he feels emotionally safe, where he's not going to be judged for his thoughts, feelings, and emotions that he experiences due to his experience over in Iraq. Is he being effeminate, or is he wanting to be able to express some vulnerability around his peers, around people who understand him, who might have been there themselves? Someone who can identify with what he's going through because they go through it themselves, or they went through it with him together, and he knows he's not going to be judged or have people misunderstand what he's saying. People aren't going to look at him as if he's a monster when he talks about how, you know, he was in a one-on-one, you know, close combat fight with a guy and killed him in a very gruesome manner because it was life or death. And people, you know, instead of looking at him and nodding and saying, yeah, I know what that's like or how different that is than to shoot someone from 150 yards away, they look at him like he's, you know, Hannibal or some sort of serial killer. Like, who does that? People in war zones do that. And you think people would understand the concept of war and that war isn't this clean video game that you play, like Call of Duty. It's where there's a lot of nasty, bad stuff that, trust me, the military recruiters are not going to talk about. That's a separate topic. But you think it would be easy for people to appreciate the notion that you do have to kill people in a war and that the deaths on either side are not pleasant and that they can haunt people for their entire lives. But apparently, based on my conversations with some veterans, that is a difficult topic for people to process. So for guys like that, they need to have their own quote-unquote safe space where they are not judged and they're understood and they have a sense of belonging there. Like, this is where you belong. I'm not going to try and get too philosophical or whatever. I'm not even sure what category this fits into, but you wonder if everybody has a space, real or, you know, you know what I mean, where they belong. And that so much of the disjointedness of modern culture is we do not allow people to go into the spaces where they belong. Now, that space may be a social interaction network, or it may be an actual physical location. Like, you're not supposed, somebody, you know, this idea that, I'll give you an example for me. There are certain states I would never move to because I know I don't belong there. And that doesn't mean you don't belong here, boy. Go back to, yeah, not like that. not in the, somebody else has a right to tell me that I don't belong here. Meaning, I do not feel like that's where I belong. I feel like there's forces at work, probably unconsciously not like actively, but just as part of our world, that prevent people from going to those places where they belong. and keeping people in a perpetual state of anxiety and rootlessness in that sense allows them to be better controlled. Because when somebody is in, feels like they're in a, they have a space or a group where they belong, that gives them a stability in which they are less prone to being controlled and manipulated by outside forces and elements. They may be controlled and manipulated within the tribe, within their close group of people, but having a handful of people control, say, 5 to 10 people is one thing. Having a handful of people control millions of people is a different story. So I wonder if that's the true search, and I think that may be the search for many millennials my age has been the search for belonging. And maybe that space doesn't exist and we have to create it, or it has always existed and we just need to find it. So on that note, I think that's all I got to say. That's all I got to say about this topic. So tune into the next episode, hopefully. I appreciate everybody who's listening to the podcast. So I guess we'll sign off. This is the New Adventures of the Mountain Pass podcast. This is TJ Martinell coming to you from my war room in my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia. Signing off.